We now turn to The Left and the Law. Jan Hocken and Mike Snedeker talk about the tragic impacts of the pandemic on prisoners in Oregon and California.
Americans are weary of months of restricted movement in response to the pandemic, intensified by recent wildfires that have either displaced or wiped out entire towns. The public health, economic, and climate crises merge in these dark times. We know that people in congregate or confined settings are more vulnerable to COVID-19 and other health problems, and that poor people are more apt to live in these settings. Jails and prisons are among those places of confinement by design. Mike, your work as an attorney takes you into prisons. What's this been like for you during the pandemic? What are you seeing and hearing?
I'm seeing and hearing a rolling disaster in our state prisons. The one that I spend the most time with is San Quentin State Prison in California, which is where California's death row is. There's more than 700 people housed there. And in Oregon, the death row, which has just recently been dissolved, is an Oregon State Prison. It's also a mid-19th century built, a large institution. But what happened in San Quentin is illustrative of what happens when there is no social distancing, no masks, and none of the precautions that have irritated people outside. San Quentin has really sharp doctors. Being close to the Bay Area means that they get a high quality of people there, and they were managing as best they could with very limited facilities from the initial outbreak in February and March. But in late May of this year, Chino, which is a prison in Southern California, was plagued by lots of cases, and they were trying desperately to have people discharge, to thin out the numbers of prisoners in order to make social distancing possible.
Which was a good thing, right?
It's the only thing, really, that works. We now know that for sure because of what happened. They decided, since they were not allowed by courts or by correctional officials to discharge people, even people who are very close to the end of their terms or who are eligible for parole, they decided, for reasons that now no one can articulate, to move 110 people from Chino, up from Chino, 600 miles north to San Quentin. Well, they did that, and they thought that they had tested these people to be sure that none of them had COVID-19. But the tests turned out to be old, and there was a little slippage, and these 110 people were sent north on a bus. When they arrived at San Quentin, they were stuck on this high up on in cells that have only bars blocking them, which is very effective for keeping people from escaping, but do not slow down the progress of germs in any way. And within a week of their arrival at San Quentin, the circulation of guards and God knows how, people started being infected everywhere in the prison. Now, death row is a series of rooms that where people live that are the size of a ping pong table next to each other. They all have bars on the doors, and they're stacked four and five rows high. And so it's impossible to maintain any social distancing at all, certainly to have any control over air circulation. So what happened is that people started getting infected, and then others did, and soon basically everybody at San Quentin was infected with COVID-19. And the results were that there's 3,200 people there. We know of 2,600 active cases. 12 people on California's death row have died as a result of COVID-19. That's more than have been actually executed since the death penalty was reinstated in the late 1970s. It slaughtered people everywhere throughout the institution, and many, many others have been sick for extended periods and may well suffer from permanent damage.
You also have some data on the infections in other prisons around the country. Can you give us a landscape of how people in these correctional facilities are suffering from the pandemic.
Almost 1,200 people have died, prisoners and correctional officers. More than 200,000 have been infected. The total keeps rising. 19 of the 20 biggest clusters of infections are in state prisons or county jails or correctional facilities. Now, the most people that have died in nursing homes. But in terms of institutions and clusters of people and outbreaks at single locale, Avenal State Prison in California has the largest number. It's 2,529. San Quentin was right behind, and this is from the New York Times as of this morning, with 2,526 people. So there, in short, hundreds of thousands of people have gotten sick within prisons, and more than 1,000 have died, and the death total keeps rising.
So some of the discussion of the victims of the pandemic in prisons focuses on how the public health problem has been handled in these institutions, transfer of or failure to release enough people. But there also are problems in the very design of prisons. You talked about that a bit earlier about bars that have no effect on airborne transmission of viruses, but are designed solely for the physical confinement of people. How would you weigh in on the design of prisons and these places of confinement and as a part of the public health emergency?
There's really no way to social distance, even in more modern prisons. Everyone eats together. There are communal bathrooms. The only way to effectively address it is to release people and to limit the numbers of people confined in any single institution.
That's kind of the approach to colleges right now, is to have fewer students in smaller groups and spread out. And you might extend this to other institutions as well.
I mean, I know social distancing is a pain and masks are annoying, but the fact is they work and they're the only thing that works. And it's nowhere is it more vividly illustrated than in places where people are forced to be right next to each other, cheek by jowl. And in those places, we've had terrible outbreaks of people getting really deathly ill and experiencing COVID from its most mild forms to more severe forms to fatal forms. And of course, in some ways, you could say the people who died had mostly pre-existing conditions, but not all of them. A couple of people in the early 50s who were relatively healthy on death row are now dead. I think we need to, if we are serious about fighting this pandemic or any airborne disease, make possible social distancing when we have something as live and vivid and active as is COVID-19 right now.
How would you assess Oregon's response to the pandemic in terms of the jails and prisons?
Well, Kate Brown and the Department of Corrections here has done virtually nothing about early releases, and therefore the population is vulnerable. There have been only about 6 or 7 people die, as far as I know. But what happened lately is that because of the fires, there's been a quick movement of more than 1,000 prisoners from prisons around the state into the Oregon State Prison in Salem. So that institution is now jam-packed, and we know that some of the people who were transferred there had earlier tested positive for COVID-19. So Oregon could be on the verge of a very serious breakout in the Oregon State Prison.
You know, you mentioned the fires engulfing so many areas and also creating this further eerie blanket of confinement, and how people in these institutions are affected by this. But there's also the reliance historically on prisoners as firefighters. Can you say anything about that and what's happening on that front?
Well, there are prisoners being used in California right now, and traditionally they've been a major source of people to take on the very risky work of doing frontline battling of fires. And to some extent, that's been done in Oregon as well. And there's been some frustration because people who've got that training have applied for a job doing that after their release, but they're not allowed to work there because they're convicted felons, even though their felonhood is what gave them the training that makes them useful and valuable firefighters.
Yeah. There's such an outrageous and blatant injustice there after literally putting themselves on the line and getting paid pennies per hour and taking the risks involved and then not being able to find work in that area.
It's consummately stupid.
As well as immoral.
True.
When you say, how would you just make the distinction between the stupid side and the immoral side of that situation for people who've been firefighters in prison and then are not able to find work in that field as convicted felons?
Even though they're among the most experienced and capable firefighters we have.
That are a dwindling and highly fatigued and weary force.
Well, overall, the treatment of prisoners, I don't think, for example, at San Quentin, I don't think that was malevolent or malicious. I think it was people scrambling because they had inadequate resources, inadequate facilities.
And you mean it specifically around responses or control over the pandemic and the rise of infections?
But there is an overall tone of general indifference to people who are incarcerated. And this is a manifestation of that indifference. They weren't treated with nearly the care that people have been in nursing homes. There hasn't been nearly the conscious efforts to avoid problems. And what we have is a flaming pandemic now that is resulting in most particularly in places where the lowest ranking citizens are housed.
And there's been organizing for some time by abolitionists and reformers around police reform and criminal justice reform. What's your sense of whether this adds fuel to those calls for criminal justice reform? Because that is so much part of the period we're living in, is calling for police reforms. But I think prison conditions are not as visible often as the boot of the officer on your neck on the street that chokes you out of breathing air. But these are, in fact, jails and prisons are often in more remote areas, less apt to be visible to many urban people.
Well, the numbers of people incarcerated has been gradually going down. And I would hope that in the fullness of time, people will realize the costs, which are considerable, of jamming so many people together in such confined spaces. And hopefully this will have, in the short or medium term, it will add impetus to the movement to decarcerate and to come up with other solutions to problems of punishment, particularly for relatively low-level crimes, than the ones that are in effect right now.
So you're saying the pandemic highlights both the irrationality and the stupidity of this way of dealing with social problems, as well as the longstanding immorality of it.
That's exactly what I'm saying.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks so much. This is Jan Hawken and Mike Snedeker talking today in our Left in the Law segment on prisons, prisoners, and the pandemic. We'll continue to follow this in the months ahead.